কিছু divine vacancy bhakti vedanta swami shri prabhupada ki ananta koji vaishnava nandi ki samacharya shila haridas thakur ki mem shri kaho shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda shri advaita gadadhar shri vans adi go bhakti vrindi ki jai shri shri radha krishna go gopinath shankun radha kun giri govidan ki jai Shri Vrindavan Dham ki jai, Shri Navadvip Mayapur Dham ki jai, Shri Jagannath Puri Dham ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhaktavrinda ki jai. O glories to the assembled devotees, O glories to the assembled devotees, O glories to the assembled devotees, Go Premanandi Vrindavan Dham. So I hope that almost everybody is here, peacefully sitting. It was a wonderful kirtan, just to get us into the spirit. But without the kirtan, it's very, very difficult for us to enter deeply into the subject matter of Krishna kirtan, because it's not of this world. And so the only way we can get our materialistic mind, which is jumping around and examining and observing things of this realm, to actually become capable of absorption into spiritual subject matter is first to take part in the kirtan. Because the Lord's holy names are so wonderful. They are our means, and they are also what we will do when we come to the perfected stage. So as I told you this morning, for those who were not present, I will tell them now, that we discussed with some detail from Srila Prabhupada's lectures and from his books, how there are really serious problems in trying to find happiness or security in this world. If we want to, we can try. But our success will be minimal, and also it will end in death. And another time to try, and another opportunity to try. And each time we will think, all these people and all these things I have, they're mine. You see, they're mine. And again they'll be taken from us, and again we'll collect them, and again they'll be taken from us. And if we suddenly think, this is becoming like a waste of time. I'm wasting my own time. What is the purpose of everything? What is the purpose of life? What am I supposed to gain from this life? When these questions start to surface on the consciousness of a fortunate soul, such a person is ready now to hear the answers. Before that time, you can see, we can go down to any big city in the world, wherever you come from, you can go down to the city, you can stand in a corner and you can watch the people going by as if like a giant river of people. And they're going this way and that. You can go and have a look at a major freeway and the cars are going this way and that. Everybody thinks they have something very important to do. They can't wait. It has to be done by me now. And off they go, backwards and forwards, running and pushing. But they're going nowhere. And an exalted transcendentalist sees this immediately. He knows this already. So he comes into this world for the purpose of enlightenment. Enlightenment of those who are trapped in this system of trying to enjoy themselves in a place where no enjoyment is actually possible, because it's changing, it's so hard work, it's full of different inconveniences, and then death. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this world to give something most extraordinary, like no other incarnation of the Lord has ever given. He came to give freely, not with any condition, not demanding anything, yet in exchange, he came to give this bhakti rasa, the taste, the experience of the love that the devotees feel for Sri Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not come alone. He brought with him his very confidential associates. In particular, he brought with him the six Goswamis in Vrindavan. And Srila Sanatan Goswami, who was the oldest of those six Goswamis, he was the first one to compile literature on the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition following in the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the first book that he wrote, it was called the Bhagavatamrita. But later, Sri Rupa Goswami wrote a Bhagavatamrita also. In other words, a book explaining the nectar of the Bhagavatam. So Sanatan Goswami's literature later became known as the Brihat Bhagavatamrita because it's very big. And Sri Rupa Goswami's book became known as the Laghu Bhagavatamrita because it's very technical. The Brihat Bhagavatamrita is in two sections. It's in three parts. One part is the first section and two parts in the second section. Today we will hear, or we will try to present, as much as we can of the first section of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. The subject, Srila Prabhupada says in the purport in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita, if you want to understand these three things, bhakti, love of Krishna, devotees, what is a devotee like, the bhakta, and the loving exchanges between them, if you want to understand this, then you should read Brihat Bhagavatamrita. So let me tell you in brief what the two sections are about. In the first section, we see Narada Muni, and he's going on a journey. This is what we want to attend to. We want to also go on his journey. He wants to find out who has the most mercy of Krishna. Krishnasya Dayata Asi. Who is that person? And in the second section of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, one very small Gopa Kumar, he is the hero of that section. And he goes on a journey also. He goes on a journey up, 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 up through the whole material world, into the spiritual world. And he describes what he sees wherever he goes. Now isn't that amazing? He describes what he sees on higher and higher and higher levels. And if our consciousness is in the right place when we read this, it opens up our consciousness in a way that's most extraordinary. And as it opens our consciousness to seeing the higher and higher and higher levels of bhakti, automatically we drop all the tedious material miserable things that we're holding on to all the time in our thoughts. They fall out in the same way as if you take a child and they had some rocks in their hands. And you say to them, I'll give you a sweet. And you hand them the sweet. When they go to take the sweet, they drop the rocks. So in the same way, as we become elevated, the other things just seem very pale. And this was the intention of Sanatana Goswami, and of course of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who gives us the accelerator. The accelerating force is the chanting of Krishna's names. Without that, you will hear these subject matters and you'll think, yes, maybe I believe that, maybe I don't. Yes, that's interesting, another piece of information to collect. But if you really hear, then these subject matters, they open us up to higher and higher understanding. So let me begin this first section of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita by Sanatana Goswami by offering his invocation. He's praying for auspiciousness on his work. And first he glorifies Sri Krishna, who he knows as Sri Krishna Chaitanya. And he says that he is an unlimited ocean of various kinds of attractiveness. And that we should never, ever, ever feel hopeless. Even as we hear of these great devotees who have so much devotion, and we look in our pockets and we have nothing, we're even in debt. what to speak of having anything. Even as we come to this, we should not feel hopeless. Why? Because of the exceptional generosity of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then he goes on to offer his obeisances to Srimati Radharani and the Gopis, to all the dear devotees. He offers his obeisances to Mathura district, because this is the sacred abode of the Lord. He offers his obeisances to Vrindavan, where he is living while he is writing this book. Then he offers his respects to the Jamuna River, who is the companion of Sri Krishna's pastimes, and to Giri Govardhan, who is the Lord's dearest, dearest, dearest devotee. He offers his respects to Krishna Prema, because this is the most valuable thing in the whole world. He offers his respects to the process of bhakti, or devotional service. He bows down at the feet of the holy name and says that the holy name is my life and soul and my everything. And then again, he offers his obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who he says distributes the taste of this rasa, or this intimate emotional exchange between God and his devotees, which is the most rarest commodity of the spiritual world. Then he begins his presentation. And the story begins with a conversation between Jaimini Rishi and Janmanjaya. Janmanjaya is the son of Parikshit Maharaj. He is the great-grandson in Pandava line. And Janmanjaya is listening to Jaimini Rishi, who has just spoken to him his own version of the Mahabharata. Apparently there are two versions, but one is not known in this present time. And Janmanjaya is so happy hearing the wonderful pastimes of his family members, the Pandavas and Krishna, that he says at the end of this exchange, "Please, is there anything else? I want to hear more. I don't want to stop hearing from you. Please tell me more." And Jaimini Rishi says to him, "Yes, I will tell you what is known as the supplement to the Mahabharata." So the supplement to the Mahabharata, as we know, Vyasadeva's Mahabharata, is called the Harivamsa. And this supplement to this Mahabharata is this Brihat Bhagavatamrita. So he says, Jaimini Rishi is speaking. He explains that Parikshit Maharaj is seated, and Sukadeva Goswami has just told him the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. And as we know, he has only 7 days. And most of those 7 days have already passed. So now when he should become silent and prepare himself for his departure from this world, his mother Uttara comes quickly to see him, and she is very anxious. So we can all imagine, if your son is about to leave this world, how anxious you would be. But her anxiety over her son has become eclipsed by a greater anxiety that she's experiencing. And that anxiety is, she says to her son, "Please, please, extract," because it's almost time to leave, "extract the essence of what you have just heard from Sukadeva Goswami. And tell it to me. Please tell me this." So Parikshit Maharaj, he shares some words with his mother to calm her down, because he's very philosophical and detached, and she is also a great devotee, so she becomes calm. And then he says, "My dear mother, at this time, it would be natural for me to observe silence and prepare myself. But your question is so nice that I cannot but share this with you." And so then he begins. He begins to teach her the bhakti conclusions, which are the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now he starts a story, and this story will continue for the whole volume. Once upon a time, in Prayag. There were many, many sadhus came there. And they were seated in front of the Bindu Madhava deity. And they were discussing amongst themselves. And because when devotees come together and they see the good qualities in each other, then the whole community prospers. And so this group of devotees, they were discussing with each other, and each one was thinking, I don't have any of the Lord's mercy, you have the Lord's mercy. And the other devotees say, no, I don't have any, I'm not, you have the Lord's mercy. And so they're arguing, but their argument is not like, I want this, I want that, but you have this, you have that. And whilst they're discussing like this in a very sweet way, one brahmana comes to that place. Now he, this brahmana, is the guru of that area. He's the spiritual leader in that place. And he comes just near the temple where there's a cleared area. And with his own hands he clears it very nicely. He sweeps it very clean, sprinkles water, makes everything very nice. And then he sets up an altar. He makes the altar himself, he puts a canopy on the altar, and he places a Shalagram Shila on the altar. And then all by himself, without anybody else, he begins a festival. He offers food to his Shalagram. He offers arti to his Shalagram. And when he offers the lamp, you know the lamp in the arti? The lamp is meant to signify a light outside the house, that someone coming from a great distance can see that light and they come to that place. That is the significance of the lamp. Because the arti is to welcome an honored guest. So he did all of his worship, everything very nicely, and then he arranged all the prasadam distribution. He fed everybody who was there. He fed even the animals, everyone with his own hands. He served and served and served so nicely. And then afterwards, he went to the deities and he said, please, whatever piety I have earned by doing this, I offer it all to you. So when we say these prayers, to Lord Shiva, anybody at the festival, sacrifice, we're actually saying that we're offering the results to them, to all the demigods and so forth. But generally, inside we're thinking quietly, the results should come to me. The oblation should come to me, and also the fruit should come to me. But he was not. He was thinking everything should go to the Lord. And then they asked him to take some prasad. He sat down with his family members very piously, and they took prasad. And one of those sadhus who was watching all of this, watching very closely what this brahmana was doing, he jumped up in astonishment. And this sadhu in disguise was Narada Muni. And he jumped up from the group of sages and he ran over to that brahmana and he embraced him and embraced him and embraced him and he said, I have never seen anyone so pious as you. What wonderful qualities you have. You have the quality that you use all your assets in the service of the Lord. That was the virtue that Narada saw. And he said, you are the greatest devotee I have seen of the Lord. The brahmana became very embarrassed. And he said, he thought for a minute, and then he said, no, I am not a great devotee. If you think I'm a great devotee, I can tell you who is a great devotee. You see them and you really understand what a great devotee is like. He says there's a king in the southern provinces in South India, and he's so great. He has his whole province, everyone in his province are devotees. He set up temples everywhere for them. He takes care of them as if they're his children. He serves them. He makes sure that they're religious and that they're making spiritual advancement. And people come from all over to visit him. There's always saints and sages coming into his territory because he's so advanced and so exalted. And in that place, you know, you don't even have to till the ground to get the grains to grow. Because you don't need to do any work there, because the demigods are so blessing that place. It's so amazing, and everyone is happy, everyone is chanting, everyone takes prasadam, everyone does worship, and the king himself does the best worship of anyone. You should go there and see him. There's a great devotee. He is most distinguished. So then, hearing about this, Narada decided he would go and meet the king. And he went to the king, he was singing his glories, he was so excited, he came into the king's court, and the king, of course, became quite embarrassed to hear all of these things said about him. What a great devotee he was. Look at your kingdom, look at your wonderful qualities, look at this, look at that, look at this, look at that. And the king became very humble, and he said, "My dear sir, I am not even any kind of devotee. I have a short life. I don't have very many assets. I'm always troubled by so many things. I'm attached to my family and so many different things like that. I have no good qualities." Because you see, this is the nature of a devotee. He deflects. He deflects the greatness of his, when people glorify him, he deflects it. So the king said, "I am just a slave of Maya. I don't deserve this." But he says, "If you want to really see a great devotee, you have to go and see the demigods, the devas. Because they're beyond these earthly restraints. They have incredibly long lives. They're almost sinless. They're practically speaking, they live so long they don't even die. And they have the power to reward one's sinful or pious activities. They rule the planetary systems. They accept worship and they give protection. All the things I do, they do those things so great, so much in the heavenly realm. And the best of all the demigods, the most pious and powerful, is King Indra. And the most special thing about Indra is that the Lord himself is Indra's younger brother. Go and see him." So then, Narada becomes very, very excited. And at this point, he's going to go beyond the earth. We're all living here on the earth, and we think that's everything. But above the earth, there are higher and there are lower planets. So Narada takes off in terms of his journey, and he arrives at Indraloka. When he first arrives, the first thing he sees is that Lord Vishnu is there with a four-armed fawn, wearing a beautiful Kadamba garland. He's decorated with all kinds of divine ornaments, sitting on the back of Garuda, and he's being worshipped by Indra. Aditi, who is his mother, is holding his hand. And Kirti, who is his wife, is offering him kirtan. The Lord is sitting like this, and he turns to Indra. He's seated on the same throne as Indra. So how fortunate is Indra? The Lord is seated there, and he turns to Indra, and he shows his beautiful lotus hand in this gesture of fearlessness. And he tells Indra, "Do not be afraid of the Daityas. I will always protect you." So then he continues to talk, and Indra is crying because he's so much attached to his brother. This is Lord Vamanadeva. And then Lord Vishnu in this form, he proceeds from there and he goes to his residence. And as he goes, Indra follows him for some time, and then he returns to his palace. And then Narada comes. Now he can speak. He offers his obeisances. He's so happy to be there. He says, "I'm so happy to meet you." Of course they know each other, but this is, he's looking for something specific. So now he's exceptionally happy to meet Indra. And he says, "I'm so happy to meet you. You are the greatest devotee. The demigods all obey your orders. And you have the Lord of the universe living with you as your younger brother, so you can serve him. You bestow the fruits of religion on everybody. You are the greatest devotee. And then Narada starts to dance and dance and dance and dance. And Indra is looking at Narada and he's trying to understand if Narada is trying to make a joke. Because Narada is very tricky. So then he realizes that Narada is really serious. And he says to him, you say that we are ruling heaven? That the demigods have, we have complete control? But so many times we've had to flee. We are not independent. Bali Maharaj came and he took over my whole kingdom. And if it wasn't for the mercy of the Lord, I would never have got it back. But the Lord, when he came only to please my mother. He didn't come for me, he came for her. And when he came, he didn't come in a full manifestation, in his original form. He came in a partial manifestation. And he used a trick. He could have killed my enemies and done something honorable and got back my kingdom, but instead he played a little trick. He got back dishonestly. So there are so many faults here. And sometimes I've even been guilty of killing a brahmana. What to speak of the fact that I have interrupted the Lord's pastimes. So what good qualities do I have? Sanatana Goswami says that for a devotee to feel dissatisfied with himself is a natural part of devotional service. Indra expresses natural humility when he speaks like this, that he is only seemingly favored, but really acts to satisfy, that the Lord really acts to satisfy others. Normally, devotees try to refute praise, but they cannot prove that Krishna does not favor them because the opposite is actually true. Krishna does favor them. He's very pleased with them. So the devotee is always saying, Krishna is not merciful to me, but not in an envious, downtrodden way like a materialistic-minded man, but in a mood of loving humility, he feels, why would Krishna want to give his mercy to me? I am such a fallen, foolish person. But he's so merciful. Somehow or another, I am continuing. And Indra went on then and he said, what to speak of, that the Lord is now present in Dwarka. My Lord, who I see here as my brother, he's present in Dwarka. And how did he help me? He ruined my worship. He burnt my forest. He destroyed my capital. He took my Parijat flower. He comes and then he just leaves. So sometimes he's in Vaikuntha, sometimes he's here, sometimes he's there. He's not always with me. He knows, he thinks that I think of him as my brother, but he just goes here and there wherever he chooses. So it is not me who you should be worshipping. Actually, it is your father. Your father. He is great. He is the greatest devotee. In one day of your father's life, one day, 14 Indras like me come and go. He creates, he rules, he maintains all the planets. He lives on a planet where it's like a Vaikuntha planet. He goes up out of the spiritual, out of the material world when the annihilation takes place. He has even Vaikuntha planets within his range, within his jurisdiction. And most important, he has Lord Mahapurush living with him on his planet. Now, did you know that on Brahmaloka, the Lord resides in the form of Mahapurush? This is something that Sanatana Goswami is giving us education about. Mahapurush is a thousand-headed form of the Lord with thousand helmets and thousand garments and many, many arms, who is capable of accepting all the offerings that are being offered to him from everyone. And on Brahmaloka, there are so many highly qualified brahmanas who are making very simple offerings or very elaborate yagyas, Vedic festivals, and all their offerings are going to this Mahapurush. And he is accepting all of the offerings. And he is no different than Lord Mahavishnu. When Lord Rama found himself on the lotus and he couldn't understand where he was coming from, what was his situation, he heard the two words, do penance. And when he heard this, he underwent penance and he got a momentary glimpse of the Lord. And then he could see that that lotus that he was sitting on was spread throughout the universe. And he could also see that in the stem of that lotus was the whole instructions how to construct or reconstruct the universe. And then he prayed to that Lord Mahavishnu, please come and live on my planet. And Lord Mahavishnu, in the form of the Mahapurush, he agreed. And so he is in fact no different than Krishna, and Lord Brahma can be considered also sometimes non-different than Krishna also. So Narada starts to glorify Lord Brahma as he has glorified others before. He tells him that there are so many pious people on your planet, and you are the master of all living beings, the grandfather of the whole universe. You rule the universe. You create the universe. You devour the universe. You are self-born. And all the scriptures, they come from your lotus mouths. There is no higher realm than yours. And even the Vaikunthas are within your realm. There are some Vaikuntha lokas within the material world. And just see, Lord Mahapurush is here with you. And you did all your penances and sought him. So you are none different, said Narada, than Krishna himself. He was using in each case a quote from the Bhagavatam for his statement. But when Lord Brahma heard that final statement, he covered his ears. He covered his ears, and because he is the Lord of the Rajagun, he even became angry with Narada, but he controlled his anger and he just kept saying, I am just a servant. I am just a servant. I am not the Supreme Lord. Why do you say this? Didn't I teach you this already? Those who have read the Bhagavatam will know. Yes, in the second canto, Narada asked some questions. And the Lord and Lord Brahma explained this to him. He said, I am nobody, I am just a servant, and it is Mahamaya herself who controls everything. She arranges everything, she creates, she annihilates, everything is going on by her, and we are all under her. And I have false ideas, abhiman. I have pride, I have a sense that I am the creator. I think that I'm the most important person in the universe. I think like this. I have a problem. I think I'm a manager. I have a problem. Rather than being the most important person, I have difficulty like this. He said, I also have a long life, but I also die. And so therefore I'm also afraid of death. And I sometimes worship for liberation, not for bhakti. And of course, Lord Rama is being very humble and placing himself in the position of the lesser demigods, who may find their managerial work of the universe, as you can imagine, managing a family or managing a business. Sometimes it becomes very tiring and you want actually to have a break. So even the demigods sometimes think, this is very, liberation looks very good to them. So he said, I only offend. I gave a benediction to Hiranyakashipu and the Lord was so angry with me. He said, don't ever do that again. And then I gave another benediction to Ravana. And he said, and recently I did the worst thing I ever did. I did the worst thing of all. I went to Vrindavan and I stole the cows and pigs. I disturbed Krishna's pastimes. And he came before me like a little boy, as a little boy with a lump of rice and yogurt in his left hand that he had just taken from the plate of one of his friends who was eating it. And he stood there, and he shared all my prayers, he heard all my prayers, he didn't say anything. He completely embarrassed me as he just stood there and listened. He's so tricky. He completely puzzled me. And I felt so embarrassed that I had to leave as quickly as possible. But you may ask, why was Lord Brahma saying this and he was not unhappy? He was smiling. Sanatana Goswami said, that is because Krishna gave him a casual look from his eye, like a smile. And Lord Brahma understood that he was extremely fortunate to have actually entered into Vraja Vrindavan Dham. So then he says, if you want to find somebody who has actually really received the Lord's mercy, who's really an exalted devotee, you must go and visit Lord Shiva. He has no interest in connection of enjoying the material world. He lives just like a madman. He destroys the universe, and the Puranas, they glorify him. Now, when Narada was about to leave, because each time he got a lead, he followed it quickly, because he'd been told to go and see Lord Shiva, he started looking downwards because he's up in Brahmaloka right now. And he starts looking downwards because he's about to go to Kailash. But Lord Brahma stopped him. He decided to suggest to him a better idea. He said to him, the reason that Lord Shiva is in Kailash is that is the residence of Kuvera. And Kuvera pleased Lord Shiva greatly and begged Lord Shiva, please come and live in Kailash, which is in my residence. Just as I once pleased Lord Mahapurush Mahavishnu, and I begged him, please come and live in my place. So Lord Shiva is there in Kailash, he said. But Lord Shiva also has his own abode, Shiva Loka. And his abode is outside of the universe. It's beyond the universal covering. But only the best devotees of Lord Shiva can go there. And the best devotees of Lord Shiva are those devotees who understand that Lord Shiva is non-different from Lord Vishnu. And those devotees can go there. And Narada was told, if you go to Kailash, you will just see a slight amount of Lord Shiva's glories. But if you go to Shiva Loka, you will really understand how great he is. So hearing all of this, Narada took off immediately. He had heard how Lord Shiva is worshipping Shankarshan. Both Lord Shiva and Shankarshan are incarnations of the Lord. It's like one incarnation of the Lord worshipping another. This is very extraordinary, quite wonderful. And so he was thinking to himself, and he had heard from Lord Brahma that Lord Shiva is not different than Krishna himself. And so off he went. And he arrived in Shiva Loka. And he saw Lord Shiva, and in Shiva Loka, Lord Shiva is not covered in ashes and skulls around his neck and grasses that give you all sorts of hallucinatory experiences and so forth, but he's actually there in opulence with his followers. It's like a Vaikuntha atmosphere, and he has his conveyances and his aeroplanes, and he has so many different things there. So then Lord Shiva was doing his worship, and he just finished his worship, and he was chanting and he was weeping before the Lord, and the kirtan was going on, and all of a sudden Narada arrived, and he was singing and singing and singing, you are the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy. When he came out of his enthusiastic mood, he wanted to touch Lord Shiva's feet. And Lord Shiva immediately said to him, "My dear son of Brahman, what are you saying?" And then he stopped, and Narada sat down on a mat as he was offered. And he began to recite prayers to Lord Shiva, describing Lord Shiva as the supreme controller and alluding to the mercy that he had been given. And Lord Shiva, just like Lord Brahma, he covered his ears and he angrily replied, "This is not true. It is not true. I am just a poor soul wishing for mercy." And Narada was shocked. He stopped speaking like this, glorifying Lord Shiva as if he's no different from Lord Vishnu. He stopped. And then he tried again, another way to glorify Lord Shiva. And he began to explain how he was the greatest of Vaishnavas. And Lord Shiva jumped up again, and he covered Narada's mouth. He said, "Please, please, do not mention my arrogance." You see, because Lord Shiva had one time asked that he wanted a benediction from the Lord. He wanted a benediction that he could become greater than the Lord. And Narada understood his mood and mind and heart. If he didn't want to disturb the Lord, because the Lord is also very soft and sweet, he does not want maybe to be asked, "Please, I want to be your servant." So Lord Shiva was thinking very cleverly. He said, "Please give me the benediction that I can become greater than you. Because the only thing greater than the Lord is the Lord's servant." So this was the mood of Lord Shiva. But Lord Shiva took it in the opposite way and said, "I'm such an arrogant person. I wanted to be greater than him. Don't you see my arrogance? Why are you praising me? Are you trying to make me understand something?" Then Narada went on and he grasped Lord Shiva's feet and he pleased him and he made him sit down again and he tried again to appease him. Lord Shiva was saying, I'm just an offender. Then Narada began again. He began glorifying Lord Shiva for his various virtues and wonderful qualities which were all correct. He even said, "You had the ability to trick your worshippers so that they too became devotees." And he used the example of Banasura. How Banasura wanted so many arms, he got so many arms, and he wanted to fight with Lord Vishnu. And during the fight, he had all his arms destroyed until he only had four left. And then the Lord told him, "Now you can become a very intimate servant of the Lord at Shivaloka," because he was a devotee of Lord Shiva. And Garga, another devotee of Lord Shiva, he prayed. He wanted a son who could destroy the Yadu dynasty. And who was his son? Does anyone know? Who came to Mathura on the 18th time? No, not Jarasandha. Who was the other one who came? Kaliyoga was his son. So he said that you tricked him, and he said also you tricked him so that actually he became a devotee eventually. And he said you forgave Chitraketu when he made a mistake. You asked the Lord to become greater than him, but that was to become his devotee. You received the ability to give liberation, even the liberation that Lord Brahma wants. And you disregarded all the opulences of this world like madmen. You're not interested in any of it, not even the subtle enjoyment. Because you see, sometimes we can disregard the gross enjoyment, but the subtle enjoyment is very, very difficult to give up. You gave that up also. But Lord Shiva lowered his head and he said, "Actually, what you're saying is incorrect. I am the Lord of Ahankar, that means I have a lot of Ahankar. I have a lot of false ego. I feel ashamed when I destroy everything. I don't like destroying everything. You're praising me, I don't like that. And How do you think I feel when I have to present a false philosophy and bewilder everyone in this material world with this impersonal Mayavad philosophy? And we think that giving the power of liberation is awful, because the devotees don't want liberation. They think that liberation is abominable. They think it's like going to hell to be separated from their Lord and their service, to be taken apart from Him. They don't want that. So forget the idea that I'm a good devotee. Forget this idea. But I'll tell you who are the Lord's greatest devotees. The Vaikunthavasis. They're the greatest of the Lord's devotees. They live up there beyond matter completely. And this in itself, as I was reading, I was thinking, this is very hard for us to understand, because our reference is matter. And our reference is our own intelligence, which goes in and out of our Krishna consciousness. One minute we're Krishna conscious, the next minute we're doing something else. We're struggling to bring our mind back. We're trying to offer things to Krishna. It's difficult sometimes. But these Vaikunthavasis, this means they've attained perfection already. Of course, Lord Shiva has also attained perfection, but he's speaking in this way to instruct us. So he says, the Vaikunthavasis, they have the Lord's mercy. They have given up everything. There's no false ego there, no pride, no fear. They're perfect. The beauty in Vaikuntha Loka is extraordinary. They have eternal bodies full of all opulences. Each resident there has more power and wealth. Just think about this. This is what Sanatana Goswami is instructing us. Each resident in Vaikuntha Loka has more power and wealth than what is available in millions of material universes and their covering shells. Each individual. This is actually our situation. This is why we are so foolish if we want to stay in the material world, lapping up the dirty water. The dirty water of material desires. Instead of wanting to come out of this condition and trying to become pure and understand our actual identity and our actual worth. The process is given, but we should take the process to heart very seriously. We should want the fruit. It doesn't mean we should be arrogant or ambitious in the wrong way, or that we should be impatient and we should neglect our earthly duties. But we should really try to understand what we're meant to be doing here. We're meant to be learning with our actions in our life, whatever our life may be, how I can offer that to Krishna and gradually become purified so I can go and live with Him in my eternal spiritual relationship with Him. So Lord Shiva said, the Vaikunthavasis never engage in any frivolity. They never deviate from pure bhakti. And there, nothing exists except bhakti. Via Sankirtan and many other forms of offering, they incessantly serve the Lord with great enthusiasm. And prema, or love, is the only activity there. Everyone there is pure. They're beyond the rules and regulations. They're not selfish. They have no interest in perfection or enjoyment or liberation. They are limitlessly dear to the Lord. And their bodies are made of pure spiritual energy. They are the best devotees. Now Parvati was sitting nearby, and when she heard this glorification of the Vaikunthavasis, she couldn't help herself. She had to say something about Lakshmi, because after all, Parvati is a partial representation of Lakshmi, although she's her own personality, just like you could say a son is a part of the father, but he's himself also. So she's non-different, but she's also Parvati and Lakshmi is Lakshmi. So she starts to glorify Lakshmi, and she speaks about how all blessings come from her. And she worships the Lord and always resides on his chest. So now, hearing this, Narada thinks, I'm going to go and see Lakshmi. And he starts thinking, oh, Padma, Padma, Padma. And he wanted to go immediately to Vaikuntha Loka. But Lord Shiva took him by the hand, and he walked him some distance away from Parvati. And he spoke to him behind his hand, very carefully, very tactfully. He saw that Lord Shiva was thinking, I want to go up. Now he wants to his Shiva Loka, Vaikuntha Loka. He wanted to go up to see Parvati, to see all of the exalted residents of Vaikuntha. But he said, you should not neglect even a better opportunity. There is a better opportunity to see an even better devotee. He says, I will tell you a secret. Sit down. So Narada sat down. And Lord Shiva said to him, there is one devotee and there is no one, no one greater than him. And that is Prahlad. Now, as we're hearing everybody describing a greater devotee, we should understand, especially Sanatana Goswami tells us when he's describing about how Brahma is describing Lord Shiva, he explains that one really can only describe or offer mercy according to his own experience. He says, Lord Brahma can understand the Lord's mercy on Lord Shiva because it falls within his own experience. Just like we could say, in Melbourne, this devotee is the greatest devotee. Then we could say, but in India, this devotee is much greater than that devotee. Because we have had the experience, we can tell these things. But the exceptional mercy obtained by a person much greater than yourself, much, much, much greater than yourself, is beyond even Lord Brahma's ability to understand, as it is for ourselves. Only things in some way similar can be meaningfully compared as greater or lesser. So this is how we can understand. Each person is looking at someone so much greater they feel than themselves and pushing Narada forward. So he said, we have seen the extraordinary bhakti of Prahlad. Bali and Vanasura, they only got blessings because they were in the family of Prahlad. The Lord blessed Prahlad to become the greatest, greatest devotee. He is greater than Lord Brahma, and he sees the Lord within himself constantly. Go to see him. Presently, he said, he's in Sutala, in the Patala, in the lower planetary systems. He's there. Go and see him and embrace him for me. And when you embrace him, tell him that all my best wishes are with him. Go immediately and see Prahlad. So Narada found this most amazing, and he decided to go and see Prahlad. And he traveled to Sutala, Sanatana Goswami tells us, by the pathway of the mind. The pathway of the mind, or the pathway of the heart, for Narada Muni means that as soon as he wished to be there, he was there. This is another extraordinary quality that exists within our swarup, or our eternal identities as Krishna's servants. We also have this ability. Now, we could say it's a little cupboard, and we have to use vehicles and petrol or legs and so many things to get from one place to another. But actually, we also have this quality hidden, eclipsed within us. So then Narada came to where Prahlad came. Narada came to where Prahlad was. And Prahlad was in an internal meditation because he is always meditating on the Lord. But from within, with his inner senses, he could perceive that Narada had come. And so he came to outer consciousness again. And he stood up and he went to worship him because, of course, Narada is his spiritual master. So Prahlad immediately stood up. He went to get all the items to worship him. But Narada didn't want any worship. Instead, he wanted to embrace him. And he embraced Prahlad and forced him to sit down again. He made him sit down. And then Prahlad also sat down. And then Narada said to Prahlad, "I am so happy to see you. You overcame so many difficulties by so many demoniac troubles that your father caused to you. And you turned so many demons into Vaishnavas. From your childhood you had such pure devotion. When Krishna appeared in the form of Lord Nrisimhadev," because remember, here, Narada is looking for the person who has Krishna's mercy. Krishnasya Dayata Asi. So sometimes he will approach devotees like Prahlad, who are not worshippers directly of Krishna in his eternal form, but they're worshippers of the expansions of Lord Krishna. And he will glorify them in the same way, but he will talk backwards and forwards between the activities of Lord Nrisimhadev and the activities of Lord Krishna. Because Narada's Ishtadev is Krishna. Narada is trying to find the person Krishna loves most. So he says, "When Krishna appeared on the shore of the ocean," meaning Lord Nrisimhadev, "he could not be pacified by any of the prayers of any of the demigods, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, Lakshmi, no one. But when you came forward, he picked you up and put you on his lap, and he started caressing you, and he started like purring, like a pussycat. He was so happy. And then do you know what he did? He started licking Prahlad, like a lion mother licks the cub. He started licking Prahlad and embracing Prahlad. He was so happy to have Prahlad. And he was so angry before that Prahlad had been in any danger. He said he wanted to give you a planet. He would have given you anything. And you didn't want anything. You didn't even want liberation. And not only that, you agreed to accept your father's kingdom just so you could help others. What a wonderful person you are. What a wonderful devotee Prahlad Maharaj actually is. So these should become our heroes, these personalities, and not the insignificant heroes that we see on the television or we read about in the newspaper, who do insignificant things under the control of the Lord's Mahamaya. We should try to hear about Krishna and his devotees, and this will make us so happy and also make us pure, and then make us that one day, if we're fortunate enough, the Lord will also want us to come back and to join him. So he glorified Prahlad. Prahlad, Lord Shiva had warned Narada, "Don't glorify Prahlad. If you glorify him, he's so humble and meek, he won't even speak with you." But Narada couldn't help himself. So here he goes, he's glorifying Prahlad. And Prahlad was very, very careful. Some of the things he refuted, and some of these things that Narada said, he turned them around in a different way and he handed them back. So he said, first of all, how can a young boy, a little boy, how can he understand anything about devotion? is too young. So if he receives instructions from a great soul and he gets mercy from him, that's the mercy of the great soul and not the little boy. So you gave me your mercy. You're the great personality, not myself. And yes, the Lord appeared to me, but he appeared only for just a fraction of a second. And then he disappeared. And I've never seen him again. And I keep meditating on him. And sometimes, yes, I'm living here in Sutala and the Lord is here. He's come to serve, but he has not come to serve me. He's come to serve Bali Maharaj. He's not interested in me, and Lord Srinidev wasn't interested in me. He didn't come from me. He came to fulfill the wishes of his devotees and his servants. He came for this reason. He didn't come for me. What good am I to anyone? I am nothing. He said, I was being punished. He punished me because now I'm so absorbed in the kingdom, I forget him. And the proof that I forgot him was once I went up towards the Himalayas. I was going to see Lord Pitamvas, which is a form of the Lord in a beautiful Pitambar in yellow cloth. And on my way, Sanatana Goswami says, on the way, Prahlad saw this sannyasi, and the sannyasi was carrying a bow and arrow. So this is a deviation from Vedic tradition. This is improper. Why a sannyasi should not do this? So immediately, Prahlad approached him and said, "You cannot do this. This is improper." And the sannyasi said, "Oh, you want to fight?" And then Prahlad and this unknown sannyasi, they fought. And they fought for days and days and days, and Prahlad could not defeat him. And then one morning when he was doing his puja, he put a beautiful garland that he had made with his own hands. He placed it around his worshipful deity. And then he continued with the fight, and when he went out to fight, he saw that his opponent was wearing the garland. And then he understood that it was the Lord himself had come in this form. And so Lord Pitambar, he said to him, "I have come to give you my blessings." And he gave him his blessings. And then Prahlad Maharaj, because he was so perfect in his service, he said, "What is disturbing is that how can I violate the Kshatriya code that somebody should not accept defeat? The Kshatriya cannot go home and say, 'Well, I lost that battle.'" This was the strictures of the Vedic culture. So he said, "How can I now accept defeat?" And Lord Pitambara said, "Actually, I am always conquered by him." So when Narada heard this, he also became completely attracted. He was so happy to hear all the different glories of Prahlad, but Prahlad was deflecting them all very quickly. And he said, "You know what is actually the form of the Lord's mercy? The Lord's mercy is given to personalities like Hanuman, because Hanuman got service. I saw the Lord for a moment, he sees him constantly. Thousands and thousands of years he served. So please, please, go and see Hanuman. If you see him, then you will see everything that you're searching for in him." So hearing about Hanuman from Prahlad, who carefully distracted Narada, sent him elsewhere, Prahlad arrived to where Hanuman is staying. And Hanuman lives in Kimpurusha Dweep. And there he's been asked to stay by Lord Ram within the material world for the benefit of its citizens so they can develop and advance in pure bhakti. And there he worships a life-like form of Lord Ramachandra as his deity. And he continuously and only with single focus, he listens to the Ramayana, he serves the Lord, He talks to him. He feeds him. He shares with him Sankirtan and everything else as if the Lord is there with him. This is the standard of Hanuman's deity worship. So when Narada arrived where Hanuman was, he came in the sky. And as he was arriving there, he was glorifying Hanuman for his service. He was glorifying him as had been described to him by Prahlad for all the activities that he performed that we know of in the Ramayana, so many wonderful pastimes. So when he arrived there, Hanuman was worshipping Lord Ram's lotus feet with the items that he had for worship. And he was chanting, and he was crying, and he was praying. And when Narada arrived, he came in the air, and he started glorifying Lord Ramachandra. And Hanuman immediately put down everything, and he jumped up into the air, standing in the air, to greet Narada, and he put his arms around his neck. And Narada was dancing with his veena, and Hanuman had his arms around his neck. And at the same time, Narada was wiping the tears of love that were falling from Hanuman's eyes. And then Hanuman came, and they both sat down, and Narada said to Hanuman, You are the dearest devotee of the Lord. Lord Ramachandra loves you so much. He told him all the glorious things that he had done, that Prahlad had told him. He summarized everything that he had just heard and presented it to Hanuman. Hanuman became a little sober, and he brought him to his temple to take darshan of the Lord. And when Narada saw his beautiful deity of Lord Ramachandra, he became so ecstatic. He was trying to chant, but he became so overcome with ecstatic emotions that he couldn't even play his veena. And in the end, he had to halt his veena to steady himself. He didn't play anything for him. And he said, "You are worshipping so wonderfully. You were the Lord's Sikhs. You were his carrier. You were his general, his doctor, his best helper, his flag." He's going on and on and on. "You were so tall on the battlefield that you stood out above all the other soldiers. And so everyone could see, oh, where Lord Ram is, because Hanuman was up so high. And Hanuman took his tail and used it as an umbrella over Lord Ram, because previously only white umbrellas were used by kings. So he took his tail, which is white, and he held his tail above Lord Ram." So Hanuman, who was feeling deep separation at this time, he was feeling so much separation. So again, hearing his glories told, or the pastimes of Lord Ram told to him, burnt. It was like as if you throw water into a boiling oil. Whoosh! All of his ecstatic feelings just came right up. And he began crying and crying as he heard the Lord's glories upon him. And he said to Narada, "Why are you doing this? Why do you make me cry, reminding me of how the Lord has neglected me? If I am favored, why has he abandoned me? Now he's in Mathura. And he's showing mercy not to me, but to the Pandavas. He remains there, and he's broadcasting their glories by all the difficulties that they are undergoing. He acted as their messenger. I acted as his messenger. I acted and did all these services. He's doing these services for them. How great they are." And he began glorifying the Pandavas. And Narada, as he heard Krishna's glories and how much he loves his devotees, Narada started becoming so excited that he like jumped up and down, and he started dancing and crying. And while he was dancing and crying, Hanuman was still absorbed in sharing the leela of the Pandavas. So then he told more of the wonderful qualities of the Pandavas and how much Krishna loved them. And eventually, as they heard more and more, even Hanuman started jumping up and down. And he said, let's go! Let's go immediately! Let's go to Dwarka! Let's go to Mathura! Let's go and see them! And then he said, you know, Bhima, he's my younger brother. He became very proud of himself. And Arjuna has me on his flag. So let us go and learn the standard of pure service from them. Because both Prahlad and Hanuman and Narada, all three, they serve the Lord in the mood of Dasya Ras. So they understood that if we go and see the Pandavas, it will greatly enhance our service, seeing their mood of devotion. And then, after a few minutes of thinking of the glories of the Pandavas and glorifying them, Hanuman sat down and he said, without the unconditional mercy of the Lord's most beloved friends, a devotee's loving service can never succeed or bear fruit. Pure devotional service proceeds completely under the authority of the Lord's beloved devotees. He began to think. He thought of his Lord. And he started to think, actually, maybe it's better for me to stay here and serve my Lord instead. He thought, he said to Narada, if I go there, even your father became bewildered. If I go there, I might commit some offense. And actually, my Lord, Lord Raghunath, he is so tender. He has such unaffected compassion, spontaneous loving exchanges, and he properly follows all the rules of religion. He is so shy and so humble that he always looks down at the ground. By hearing the pastimes of Krishna, the unlimited attraction I feel towards my own master has increased. So I should stay here. He might call me. If he calls me, I have to be here. Because I love him more than I love my life. But you should go and see the Pandavas. So Narada took off immediately. He took off so fast. He wanted now to see these greatest devotees of the Lord. Now these devotees, the Pandavas, are exceptional. Because they're the friends of Krishna himself. Not Vishnu, not an incarnation of the Lord, but Krishna himself. And so Narada began glorifying the qualities of Yudhisthira. He said, anything or anyone associated with Krishna is dear to a pure devotee. When Vaishnavas come together in either casual or lifetime relationships, they naturally develop love for one another. Their spiritual assets expand as each devotee's qualities magnify. So this is the process of bhakti, that when one comes together with other devotees, one should enhance their qualities, appreciate them, and by doing so the devotees, their own qualities, and then the group's qualities expand, and everything becomes very glorious. So hearing this from Hanuman, and being told to go at once and see the Pandavas, Narada arrived there in Hastinapur. And at that time, Yudhisthira and the Pandavas were in a meeting. And do you know what they were discussing? It's very interesting. They were discussing how they could create some kind of a catastrophe, something that Krishna would come. What they could do. So Sanatana Goswami says, for devotees there are only two kinds of catastrophes. We're speaking here of advanced devotees. And the two kinds of catastrophes are those that the Lord arranges to show their glories and those that the devotee arranges to get the Lord to come. So, as Narada had before, he glorified the Pandavas, and we're getting a little late, so I'm not going to go through, and we already know the glories of the Pandavas. He glorified them so much, and they were very, very sad because Krishna had left them. They said, yes, whatever you say is true of us, but Krishna has left us, so we are so unfortunate. We tried to get him to come, but Kunti Devi said, but you know, he has such attachment to the Yadavas in Dwarka, I think he will never come and see us again. Then Yudhisthira told him, you should go and visit the Yadavas. And he glorified the amazing qualities of Dwarka and the devotees of Dwarka. And having heard so many wonderful things about them, Narada decided to set off to Dwarka. Now this arrival in Dwarka is where we're going to end today. But I thought we should at least have Narada entering into Dwarka, because tomorrow I will share with you what happens after he arrives in Dwarka. And this is where we hear the highest and highest subject matters of bhakti, of prema bhakti. So in brief, he entered the city, he entered the Sudama assembly hall, he saw everyone there, all the opulences of Dwarka, how wonderful it was. And he glorified the senior most person, Ugrasena. He praised him in so many ways. He praised all the residents of Dwarka. The residents of Dwarka said, yes, it is true, we're fortunate because the Lord is here. But we are very insignificant. The Lord is so merciful. And if you really want to find the person who has the most of the Lord's mercy, here in Dwarka, you should meet Uddhava. And so Narada was now told, go to see Uddhava. So Narada started off to the palace of Uddhava, because he's been to Dwarka, he knows Dwarka. So he started off in that direction. And King Ugrasena, he stopped him for a moment. And he said, Uddhava never, ever, ever leaves the side of Sri Krishna. I have never obtained such a blessing because I have to rule the kingdom. And he's telling him two things here. He's telling him, one, that don't go to his place, he won't be there. He'll be with Krishna. So go where Krishna is. Go to his inner chambers, to his palace, and there you can see him. And he's also telling him, of course, I am not so great, so please don't look at me. So he tells him, go quickly to see Uddhava, because he's so fortunate, Narada, he can go straight into the inner chambers of Krishna's personal palaces. He says, and when you go there, please, and we'll finish on this note, he said, please tell Krishna that he's late. Bring him very quickly, because we can't live without seeing him. And then Narada immediately set off to see Krishna. Now I'll finish this with one sweet little section from Srila Prabhupada to bring us back down to the world we live in. This is called When Krishna Calls. This is Prabhupada speaking. So Krishna is so kind. When he sees that you are eager to go to Krishna, he calls. He calls. Just like he explained to Arjuna, my dear Arjuna, because you are my very dear friend, I am disclosing this most confidential knowledge to you. This is the most confidential part of knowledge. Don't become entangled in this pavarga. Take shelter of me. So this is calling Arjuna. And Prahlad Maharaj, he was expecting, When will the Lord call me? This is real mercy. You cannot call God or Krishna, please come here and save me. He is not your servant. He never agrees to become your servant. But when he is pleased with you, he calls you. Please come. You come. Come and surrender to me. And therefore we must expect that when will the Master call me? This is how we have to think. When will Krishna call me? Don't try to see God. Act in a way that God will call you. Please come here. This is wanted. This is bhakti. Not, oh God, please come, I will see you. Why God should come to you? He's very busy. What have you done that you want to see God? If you say, oh Indira Gandhi, please come, I will see you. Will she come? Become qualified. And then she would have seen you. Similarly, don't try like that. That is not bhakti. Don't think, Gopal is not anyone's servant. Don't think, Nachiya, Nachiya, Are Gopal. Gopal is not anyone's servant that he'll come dancing and dancing. You become qualified and he'll see you. And then he will call you. Yes, come back. Come back home. Come back to Godhead. Be qualified. Thank you. So tomorrow we'll hear the second half in the morning of this first section of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Now you have to have some recreation time. Because then there's another kirtan and some more guitar. Okay.